Well, that was one of my favorite shows growing up. Of course, it was on reruns by then, but I didn't know what a rerun was. I loved The Wild, Wild West with James West, you know, Robert Conrad, and his sidekick, Artemis Gordon. What I thought was, you know, these were government agents, of course, and they were sent into these really difficult situations, and they were always able to get out. And the way that they got out, the way James West got out, was through all of his gadgets. So we have a picture here of this tailor-made jacket and his vest. And inside that jacket and vest were all sorts of gadgets that he could use to get out. He had a file that he could pull out, and he could file his way out of problems there. He had a knife hidden in there that he could throw if he ever got in trouble. One of the neatest things he had was the derringer. It was in his right sleeve, and he could just drop that derringer out, and he had a gun right there. He had acid hid, a vial of acid somewhere hid in his jacket there. And then you look at his boots. Now, his boots were really cool. I thought that in the front of his boot was a knife that could be projected out. And in his heel were plastic explosives. And then there was the simple cigar. But it wasn't a cigar. It was really a propane torch. You can imagine me as a kid how much I loved the Wild Wild West, because I couldn't wait to see how he was going to get out of the next situation. So when we come to Daniel chapter 6 as a child, if I was just a little boy listening to that story, my perspective would be, how is Daniel going to get out of the lion's den? How's he going to escape? Is he going to be like, you know, James West? Is he going to break out? How's he going to get out of it? I think most preachers that have preached from Daniel 6, they've all preached it from the perspective of, once you're in the lion's den, how do you get out? How do you face the lions in your life? That's what most preachers do, and even I've preached it similar to that. But today I want you to realize that it was the person that Daniel was before he went into the lion's den that is the key to how he got out of the lion's den. Now today we are finishing up our study of Daniel. And we've learned a lot about Daniel as we've looked at our study. We started at the beginning where Daniel was, as a young boy, was taken captive by Babylonian and his four friends, and they all remained true to God, but they entered into the king's service. They faced all sorts of trials and conflicts. His three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, they all stayed true to God, but they were thrown in the fiery furnace. Daniel remained true to God, even though his life was threatened. And he was called out of retirement. This is what we looked at last week, to read the writing on the wall for Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, Belteshazzar. He reveals bad news to the king. You're going to die. Your kingdom's going to end, and a new kingdom will come about. And it's exactly what happened, and a new king came, a new nation from the Medes and the Persians. And that brings us to Daniel chapter 6. And this new king sets up a new government. So turn with me to Daniel 6, and I want to look at the first three verses. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them, so the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. So Darius appoints 120 rulers to work under him. And to oversee the 120, he puts three commissioners over them. And then Darius, of course, he was over everybody. Darius was ultimately still a dictatorship. But remember, Daniel by this time is in his 80s, probably about 83 years old. So is he retired from his service from the Lord? No. The new ruler is immediately impressed by Daniel. Verse 3 says, Daniel distinguished himself by his exceptional qualities. What was it about Daniel that set him apart? He wasn't just a typical advisor to kings. He was a man that the kings sought out. They trusted him. They valued him. He wasn't just a smart person with a quick mind. I mean, very soon he was going to be facing a den of lions. Was he a lion whisperer? Did he have that ability to see life through a lion's eyes? What were the qualities that Daniel had? Well, as we study Daniel today, we see three traits that will distinguish us as followers of God that we should strive for. The first trait is to live a life of complete honesty. King Darius was so impressed by Daniel, he puts him in the top three positions in government. As a commissioner over the kingdom, Daniel so distinguished himself that the king said, I want to put this guy on top. I want him to be the prime minister of the whole nation. Same thing happened to Joseph. Well, this sent shockwaves through the government. Anytime somebody gets a promotion, there's always somebody that's jealous. There's always somebody that's upset. And so these other leaders set a plan in motion to take Daniel out. Now today we hear a lot about government conspiracies. And many people will make fun of you if you talk about the fact that there's government conspiracies or the deep state. They'll kind of look at you like you're loony, you don't know what you're talking about. But I want you to look at what happens here with Daniel, because it was happening back then and it's still happening today. Look at Daniel 6 and verse 4. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel and his conduct of government affairs. But they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. This really happened. These leaders got together in secret and they set out a plan to destroy a man's life. Now, Daniel had been in public service for some 50 years, and ever since he had arrived in Babylon as a teenager, so these leaders started investigating his history. They looked at all of his decisions in government. He made thousands of decisions. There was a whole record of his life in government service. They looked at all of his contacts. They looked at all of his financial dealings, and amazingly enough, they couldn't find anything. They couldn't find any evidence of corruption. So there was nothing they could bribe him with. Do you think that bribery happens today? Do you think this is happening in our government today? Well, it does, and it happened back then. This has been a regular part of politics. Daniel was above reproach. He was honest. He was honest whether he was talking to his friend or whether he was talking to the king. He couldn't be swayed by money. He couldn't be swayed by influence. He accepted advancement at times, but it didn't change what he knew was right and wrong. He spoke honestly to all. Power could not sway him. He would honestly do his job, and he would do it all the same way all the time. He was honest. Well, I know preachers that have been swayed by money. I know him personally. I know one preacher who had his house financed by one of his elders. Big down payment, financed by one of his elders. I know a preacher that gave one of his wealthy church members a construction bid on the church. And that man's construction company profited from the church. Now, the preacher got something out of it. He got all this support from one of his leaders. But that church member ended up controlling that church and running it like it was his own place. See, money speaks. Now, I want you to think about this. If a preacher can be enticed by money, what about a politician? Multiply that times millions of dollars, and you can see what's happening today. Our politicians are bought and paid for. It's a picture of America. People are taking positions based on the money that they're receiving from their donors. It's hard to gauge somebody's motives today, but most of the time, you can still track it down to money. Because money does talk. Or you can track it down to gifts that somebody's given. We make decisions in our own life based on what is best for us financially. Sometimes people are nice to us financially because they want something from us. Well, what distinguished Daniel throughout his career was that the rulers figured out that the money didn't sway Daniel. And power didn't sway him either. He was an honest, transparent person. He spoke the truth. Not to get something out of it for himself. And this is the kind of person that we should be also. Paul had told this to the young preacher Timothy, and these are words that we should live by. This is 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12. Do not let anyone look down on you because you are young. But set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in faith, and in purity. God calls each of us to be examples for Him in all that we do. So we need to live above reproach. We need to live in complete honesty in what we say and what we do, whether we're acting in private or whether we're acting in public. Christians strive to live lives that are different from what you find in the world. The second trait is to live a life devoted to God. So they could find no corruption in Daniel. So let's look at what they do next. Look at verse 5, chapter 6. So the administrators and satraps went as a group to King, actually verse 5. Finally the men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So these leaders figured out that the only way they were going to get Daniel out was to put him in a position where he had to choose between his God and the government. So Daniel was very open about the fact that he worshipped the one true God. Everybody knew he wouldn't compromise. He would never bow to another God. And there was no law against what Daniel was doing. So to trap Daniel, they had to pass a new law to get him in trouble. And then they had a whole bunch of secret meetings. You don't think that they have secret meetings today in government? They had a lot of secret meetings to find just the right law. So the 120 satraps and two of the commissioners and a large group of leaders all meet with the king. Daniel wasn't present. And then they start pouring on the charm. "May the king live forever," they say. "We've all agreed that the king should issue an edict." Now, was it true that they all agreed? No, because Daniel wasn't there. They were lying about him. Daniel didn't get to speak up. He didn't get to give his view, but they were misrepresenting him. Darius doesn't know this. It was a lie. He assumed that what they were saying was true, and he was assuming that Daniel was okay with it. "O king, we all agree you should issue a decree. Put it in writing so it cannot be changed. Anyone who prays to any god or human in the next 30 days except you shall be thrown in the lion's den." So they appeal to the king's ego. The king thought this would unite his kingdom. After all, it was only going to last 30 days. It made perfect sense to the king. So his new decree was mandated. Anyone who violated this decree would face death by being fed to the lions. So the only way the conspirators knew their plan would work is because they knew that Daniel was open about his devotion to God. He was 100% committed and loyal to the Lord. So we're left with the question ourselves. Who are we really loyal to? You know, we want to please all the people in our lives. We want to please our spouse. We want to keep them happy. We want to please our family. We want our friends to be happy. We want to keep our boss happy. We want our fellow employees to be happy. But do you know what you find when you try to make everybody happy? There's always going to be people that will not be happy. You can't do the perfect balancing act and keep everybody happy without being dishonest, without compromising somewhere. So the first place we have to start is with the Lord. The Lord has to be the number one spot. We do everything to please Him. We reorder our lives and we realign everything in the proper order behind Him. If we do that, we'll never have to lie and we'll never have to cover up. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be easy. As we'll see, Daniel's integrity would be attacked by deception. Christians strive to please God first. The third trait to strive for is to live a life of unashamed worship. So what does Daniel do? He hears that they've conspired against him. And if he wants to avoid the lion's den, all he has to do is stop praying for 30 days. That's easy to do. It really is. Now, if you want to do something really hard, try to pray for 30 days straight. Now you're getting into something difficult. Well, Daniel, maybe he could have just prayed in secret. He could have just hid somewhere and prayed. So what does Daniel do when he hears about this decree? Look at verse 10 here. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem, and three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. So what did Daniel do? Verse 10, he did as he did before. He went to his house, he climbed up his stairs, he had a small room on his roof. The windows were open in the direction toward Jerusalem, and he prayed to God. How often did Daniel pray? Three times a day. This was his regular custom. He didn't do it based on circumstances. He didn't do it based on how he was feeling. He was raised to pray three times a day, and he continued to pray three times a day. Daniel wasn't going to let a government decree stop him from praying. Daniel knew he'd been set up, and so conspiracies really do happen. So what is Daniel's attitude in prayer? He was giving thanks to God. Daniel wasn't fulfilling some religious ritual, some checklist. He had been in a true relationship with God. Now I want you to think about this. Daniel is in his 80s, and it says he was praying on his knees. You know, there's a certain age when getting on your knees can be difficult. And I'm guessing when you get into your 80s, that's probably the age. Am I right about this? You don't really want to be on your knees when you're in your 80s. Usually if you do, you're worried about how you're going to get back up, right? Or while I'm down here, I'm going to see if I can find something else to do. You don't want to be on your knees. But Daniel, he gets on his knees and prays. Now the Bible doesn't give us an official prayer position, but this speaks of Daniel's devotion. Even at his age, he's down on his knees and he's praying to God with deep feeling. Daniel was open about his faith. It wasn't something that he kept in his home only or something in his assembly. He loved the Lord. He was devoted to Him and everybody knew it. People ask, what can I do to make a difference? The place to start is in your daily worship, your daily prayer time. Just be open with those around you that you're a Christian. You don't have to preach a sermon every time you see somebody. Just let people know in your own subtle way that you love the Lord. Daniel's faith wasn't based on who was in office. It wasn't based on the policies in government. He just lived for God in all that he did. And you can always tell when someone is a Christian. People will notice that your car's gone on Sundays. People can tell you're a Christian by the life you live. It's more than just living a good moral life. It's more than just telling people, I'll pray for you, or every now and then mentioning the word God. It's more than that. It's a whole life. It's what happens when nobody's around, and it's the fact that we're talking to the Lord. We have a relationship with Him. You can spot a Christian when you spend time with him. Daniel lived a life of unashamed worship. He prayed, and he didn't care who noticed. And he ended up getting in trouble. So the government conspirators are at work. They put surveillance on Daniel. Do they really do government surveillance on people? I mean, come on. Yeah. There was government surveillance going on. They followed Daniel. Whether they were watching him from another rooftop, whether they were in his house and they burst through the door, we don't really know. But they spotted him doing something against the law. He was praying to another God. Now let me just throw this out here. If there was a law against praying, and they put you under surveillance, Would they find anything? Would you be in trouble for any prayer time that you had? Well, Daniel got in trouble. And these conspirators went to the king and they said, "O king, we remember the decree that you signed that if anybody prayed to anybody but you, they would be thrown in the lion's den." And the king said, "Yes, it stands. It cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians." And then they dropped the hammer and they said, "Daniel, one of those Jews who is exiled isn't paying attention to the law. He's been praying 3 times a day. Did you notice that they brought up race? See, Daniel was a different race. He was Jewish, and all of them were Mede. There's always going to be racism, and you can't fix it with legislation. You can't. These conspirators obviously hated that a Jew was put into a position of authority. They were trying to make the king angry. They were trying to turn him against Daniel. Daniel wasn't praying to rebel against the king. Daniel prayed because he loved the Lord. That's who he was. He was a man of faith. And remember, he and King Darius had a good relationship. Is the king mad at Daniel? No. The king is downhearted. His number one advisor, who had helped him so much, that had truly cared for him, now would have to be put to death. And the law couldn't be changed. And he looked for every way he could to change this law. But come sunset, it was no use. The king realized he'd been trapped in government collusion. His leaders had tricked him. And they came back and they told him, "You've got to put Daniel to death. You signed the decree." So the king realized he had no choice. He was very discouraged. The king actually escorted Daniel to the lion's den. This is how you carried out executions in that day, capital punishment. They fed him to lions. This was probably a big pit in the ground, or it might have been a cave with a huge stone rolled over the door, maybe put on top of the pit. The lions were underfed on purpose. And before Daniel is thrown into the pit, the king says, "May your God, who you continually serve, rescue you." Maybe the king had heard about what happened to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and how God had rescued them. And he holds out hope that a miracle would save Daniel. So Daniel is thrown into the den. A stone is rolled over the entrance, and they sealed it with their signet rings, and it was a done deal. So King Darius had a long, restless night. He wouldn't eat. He wouldn't sleep. He didn't want any entertainment. And then when the light of dawn awakened, he rushed to the lion's den. So look at verses 20 through 23. "When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, 'Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?' Daniel answered, 'May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions, and they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have they done any wrong before you, nor have I done any wrong before you, your majesty.'" Daniel was alive. Daniel says, "My God sent an angel to shut the lions' mouths." God sent a guardian angel to protect Daniel. This tells you that angels are alive and well and working in our world today. We don't know everything that angels do. There's a lot of mystery involved. And most of the time, we do not even see them at work. But they are at work in our world. You see, it wasn't Daniel's skill. It wasn't his physical strength. He was an elderly man. It wasn't his ability to be a lion whisperer. It wasn't his problem-solving skills. It's not what Daniel did when he was thrown into the lion's den. It's the life that he lived before. Daniel lived a life of faithfulness. He says, "I was found innocent in God's sight." Daniel was a man of complete honesty, a man of devotion, and a man of unashamed worship. Did the lions just stare at him? We don't know. Did they ignore him? We don't really know what happened in this den here. But when he was brought out, not a single wound was found on him. And the chapter ends with all the government conspirators being put to death and their families. This was the law of the Medes and the Persians. Couldn't change it. And the king ends up issuing a new decree. Recognizing the God of the Hebrews, his power and his deliverance, he had many good words to say about God. God used the faith of Daniel to change a nation. And Daniel goes on to serve not only Darius, but King Cyrus. All this before he finally does retire. He still had revelations to interpret. The great lesson to us is this. There's no way that you're going to be able to prepare for the trials and troubles you're going to face in your life. There's just going to be things that happen and it's going to be out of your control. You're going to face conspirators. You're going to face being put into the lion's den. The key is your daily abiding faith, living a life of integrity, and knowing that God is always with you all the time. Sometimes you don't know it, but He's there. So we need to rest on His strength and His protection when danger comes. So how is your faith doing? You find yourself stressed? You find yourself worried? Does it seem like things are just overwhelming in your life? Is there dangers? Is there worries that you're facing? You're not alone. God is with you. You just have to have faith in Him. That's what we need to do today. We just need to renew our faith. We need to strengthen our faith. We need to lean, as the old song says for our invitation song, we need to lean on the everlasting arms. We need to lean on His strength and His power, because our strength is not going to cut it. He's going to carry us through. So let's all stand as we sing our invitation song.